It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 338. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions for any technology problem that you're having, suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, and also on Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. I have some great consulting stories from in the trenches that I know you enjoy. I have an audio segment sent to me by Winston Wolf that I'll play, and then I'll get to some email, and I have some independent music from a Mike Tech Show listener and chat member. Look forward to playing that. Let's get started. The first link for tonight is how to repair an error that you could get on VMware Fusion. It seems like version 2 and higher from VMware Fusion, and this is the program that you run on Mac OS X that enables you to run your operating systems virtually. I have a client slash friend who lives in New Jersey that has an iMac set up, and he really depends on his XP session that he has in VMware Fusion. Well, his son changed the router that he had in his home office, and he put an airport and then put the CD in and ran some things. Nothing was working. So I get a panic phone call, and this is New Year's Eve, and we start working through it. And then, and this is a New Year's Eve day during the day, and we start working through it. I really can't solve the problem, and I start Googling the message, and I find a couple things, and I said, look, I'll try to fix this tomorrow, because I still had a lot of things to do. The show that I was running, he had to go off. It was his birthday. This is Dave. Actually, this is Dave the Rave, who does the music in some segments that we've had in the post show. On New Year's Day, I get up a real panic call. Mike, my XP will not recognize the network, but the Mac does. So the error message that he got is the network bridge device on /dev VM net 0 is not running. This seems to be a problem. I don't know the root cause. Nobody seems to be able to come up with the root cause. But what we found, I found on Googling, and I found a great answer, because it was a complex string that resets the adapter, and what you have to do is restart the Fusion and the boot adapter that is part of VMware Fusion, and that's the VMware Network 0 adapter, and this resets that connection. So the minute I typed that command in a terminal session on the Mac, it fixed the problem. Now, he was excited. Everything's great. A couple days later, he has a power outage. And those of you who follow Dave on Facebook, he talked about and mentioned about the power outage. Well, after the power was up, the same problem occurred. And I had to log in and cut and paste that command again to fix his problem. So now I'm automating it for him, but we don't know what the root cause is, except that something happens in the middle of, you know, a hard crash. And I guess that adapter, the driver, is very sensitive on VMware. I have not experienced this problem, but many, many, many people have. So I wanted to put the correct way to fix it that I've been able to, you know, we this error has, you know, replicated itself, and this fixes it each time. So it's happened twice, and I've set Dave up so he'll be able to do it. If he runs into it again, he doesn't have to wait for me to log on to log me in and then connect. So anyway, a really good VMware tip. I wanted to cover that. This week seems to be invasion of the laptops. You know, I am not the laptop person. Steve Cherubino is the great laptop person. And I do the best I can. Well, let's start with story one. A fellow BNI member who I do work for, that's a network organization I belong to help, you know, gain referrals and grow my business. He brought his laptop about, it's like 3 or 4 years old, and he brought it in. And after one of our meetings, after the meeting, we went aside and his system was slowing down. The first thing I did was run Crystal Disk Info. His drive is going bad. So we had to make a decision. Does he go buy a drive, put it in? First, we have to get the data off. He had a USB stick with him. I quickly got the data off. I tried to copy everything from his profile. It wouldn't copy. It seems like there were bad sectors where some of his profile sat. As a matter of fact, on the startup, and this is a Windows Vista machine, on his startup, it said his profile could not load, and it was loading a temporary profile. So this is the error that led me to find that the hard drive is failing. I was able to copy all of his critical data, got it onto a USB stick, and I said, you got two choices. We either buy a new hard drive, put it in, and then I reload the operating system. He never made his recovery disks. So he had no media from this compact Presario, or compact, I'm not sure what model it was, laptop. And that is a lesson right there. Whenever you get a new system, you do not get recovery media anymore. Dell, you can pay a little extra when you customize your system, and they charge you like nominal fee, like $3 or $5, and you can get the media. It's well worth it. Check that box, get the media. If you do not get the media, you absolutely, the first thing you should do when you open that system and you see that it's running, get 4 or 5 DVDs, go to the recovery manager, the management utilities. Usually there is some instructions with the system that will tell you that this is the first thing you should do. Do it. Make the disks. We have to decide that he doesn't have the media. He said, Mike, you know what? The system's old and it's old enough that I don't want it. I'll buy a new system. I gave him the specs of what he should be looking for after we talked about what he needs to do. He's an attorney. So he went and bought a new computer. Last night, he was over the house. I was helping him get some software on there that he needed and get a backup working. So I got that working. And then the first thing I said, we need to make your recovery disks. That took a long time. It made 4 DVDs, and it had to build out the files so then it could start burning. When you get an HP, it'll walk you through it. Take the time. Block out a few hours, and now put those disks safely away. Label them exactly the way the instructions that the system manufacturer will tell you. So we did that, and he has all of his disks. Now, another client. This is a brand new retainer client. The CFO of the company brought in his home laptop to me. It would not boot. It would start up It would try to run Windows a little bit, and it would just reboot. He explained that he does have some data, but he has never backed it up. So the CFO brought in his laptop. I brought it home last night after I was finished working at the office there. I could not find the operating system using my ERD commander. It would not even see the system to mount. So I took the drive out and plugged it into my USB cable, put it in, plugged it in, and guess what? It could try to see it. The drive would come up, then it would disappear. The little hard drive kept churning and burning and trying to, you know, making noise, trying to start up, trying to get going. I could not read that drive. I even tried the USB cable into another system. I did get Crystal Disk Info, did see it, and it reported red that it was bad. And it seen it enough that it actually read that the system was bad. There was all kinds of errors. I tried everything to get data off it. I could not. This is a very old Dell laptop. The data was never backed up. I put the drive back in. I took it to him today and said, I did everything I could, and he understood. And he said, okay. I said, look, when you buy a new laptop, which is what he's going to do, I said, you bring that right in. And when I'm on site, you know, the next day that I'm going to be on site after you buy that, you bring it in, and I'm going to set up where we're going to back it up. I'm going to set up a procedure that you're going to follow, that you're going to back this up to an external drive. And you're going to do this all the time on a regular basis. And I will show you how to do it. It's very easy. And he agreed, and he thanked me for everything that I did trying to work on it. What can you do? These are lessons that you have to back up your data. And to run into two into this very same week, well, that's not enough. Behind me, there's two more laptops that this is a little easier. The data's off them. They're running, but they just need to be cleaned up and totally redone. This is for one of my financial advisors where the drive is encrypted and there's all kinds of things on it that I need to blow it away properly and then redo the operating system so he can pass it on to someone else that's a niece or a nephew. And there's two older laptops, good enough to be able to get on the internet, get Office on it, and be able to do some word processing. Nothing wrong with it, the Dell laptops. So I said, I can turn them around, no problem. That's my laptops this week. I had another laptop that is a new laptop purchased by a client that they purchased through me. They brought their old laptop, so I'm going to transfer everything. I'll tell you, I've had it up to my neck, up to my eyeballs in laptops this week. And I don't mind. I like the work. But I'll tell you, the work's starting to back up now. I had to order two more systems for a law firm that's a client. They needed two more Windows 7 systems, so I ordered them. Tomorrow, I'm on site with another client. I got to add memory to a system. And then there's an old server that's running a single app that I have to migrate to get rid of this old box. Now they tell me it's making loud noises. So everything's backed up. There's no problem. I'm going to go down tomorrow, bring my can of air, blow it out and see what's happening. And it might just be a power supply. And if I can, what I might be able to do is maybe get that app and get it transferred to one of their other servers. They have four servers. This is the oldest, and this is like a white box server that someone had built way before me at one point. So it's probably on its last leg. So time to not put any money into it, but let's move the application off. Loud noises, not a good thing. So I'm headed down there tomorrow, and there's a threat of some snow tonight, but luckily the forecast, it's just going to be 1 to 3 inches. We can handle that with driving, so not a big problem. That's my consulting stories for tonight. Let me play you this audio. Give a listen.
Hey, Mike. Winston Wolf here. I came up with an interesting tip that I thought I would share with you. I think that you and some of your listeners may be able to use this on a regular basis. So here it goes. I have a client that has Windows Phone 7 phones for their business, smartphones, and I don't own one. And they called me and said, hey, how do we get this thing configured to hit our Exchange server? And I thought, I don't know, really, because I've never dealt with one. And unless you're Mr. Moneybags, you're not going to be able to go out and buy one of every one of these phones that are coming out, right? So what can you do to be able to help? Real simple answer, and that is Microsoft makes a software development kit available for developers, but part of it is a simulator or emulator of the phone. So if you download the SDK, you can run the phone emulator and do all of the functions that the phone can do. The same holds true for Android and for iPhone. So if you find yourself not experienced in a given phone system and you want to be able to support or test a given application or a given setting, well, you know, you don't have to go buy one. All you have to do is download the SDK, install the SDK, and in essence, you're going to be running a virtual machine that runs the operating system of the phone. I have the Android SDK running, and I have the Windows Phone 7 SDK running on my system. I'm running Windows 7. The iPhone SDK requires Apple OS X, so I haven't booted up my Hackintosh yet to get the iPhone SDK going, but I imagine it would be about the same, in that you launch the emulator and you have the same exact interface that you would from the phone itself. So if you find yourself in need of testing, or if you just want to play with the operating system of the phone, download the SDK. It's free. Get used to it. Now you have a tool that you can use when the time comes.
That is an excellent tip. Winston provided me the links that will be in the show notes to allow you to download these SDKs. One of the things I've been challenged with, and I never thought of this, I was going to buy, and I've been experiencing some of the tablet machines running the Android operating system for that very purpose. I mean, I still want to investigate some of the tablets to see what's a good one that I can talk about. I really would like to get them on an eval rather than buying it and then returning it. But what a great idea, especially for the Android app, the new Windows 7. I have an iPhone. I'm not going to be buying an Android phone. I'm not going to be buying a Windows 7 phone. I think that is an awesome idea. Great tip, Winston. Thank you for sharing that. Let's get to some email here. This is from Ruben. Best wishes for a great and fruitful 2011 from your longtime listener in Malta, Europe. Have a question for you at the beginning of 2011. I have a Samsung N210 netbook running Windows 7 Starter. It was running fine, but all of a sudden would not switch off after invoking hibernation. Using power config, I disabled and re-enabled hibernation, but to no avail, which had worked on another notebook. When invoking hibernate, the netbook starts the procedure, seems like hibernate data is being written to the disk, but then does not power off. Any expert clues on diagnosing this issue? I was wondering, when you turn it on and off, how about turning it off, doing a defrag on the system, and make sure you do a cold boot, and then invoke it? Other than that, I'm not sure, unless there's something corrupt or something wrong with your system, you know, with the operating system there. You can call the manufacturer. That's an obvious one. See if there's something to do. If you have any tips on what we can do to help Ruben here, let me know. Do you have the recovery disk? And maybe just redo it, maybe put it back to the factory defaults. Are there any, is there a BIOS upgrade that you can apply to the system? Check the manufacturer's website and see, because there could be some kind of an issue with hibernation. Definitely on the, since this is a Samsung, check the Samsung forums and search on hibernation. There might be someone else doing something. Other than that, off the top of my head, I don't have anything else to try. So if you have some, I guess, diagnostic ideas, let me know, and I will pass them on to Ruben, and then I will follow up in a future show. This is from Jeffrey. Hi, Mike. I enjoy your show very much. It seems that you're very adept at email problems, so maybe you can help. I'm unable to import the exported IAF accounts. I tried Microsoft's method with Windows Live Mail, which you simply export an account as an IAF file, but it doesn't import into newer Microsoft Office Outlook versions. Is there a program to do this? I started Googling, but again, I talked about this once. I was afraid because there was a few utilities that mentioned they can go from Windows Live Mail to Outlook. I'm not sure. I want to get some feedback from someone to know that it's an they have an absolute utility that they will swear on a stack of Bibles that they used it and it works. The other day, I had someone with like 8 accounts and did them all manually as usual. But there has to be a quicker way, especially when the client forgets passwords, etc. It's something I run into Outlook all the time. It's a problem in being able to save all that information. I remember an email in the past that someone mentioned they almost had to go through the entire profile copying, not just copying the profile, but sort of the file manager transfer settings where all of the settings get transferred. And you have to go through that whole process just to get the email. I wish Microsoft would have an export of the accounts option for Outlook. It is something that I wish they had. With every email product that they come out with, they should have something that can properly export the account settings, and then you can import them, you know, going from one setup to another. And it not only should do that, it should grab the NK2 file, you know, that auto starts to be, it's the file that retains all the addresses that you commonly type in the to field. That's stored in some bizarre area. That's why we have to use a special utility for that. I mean, come on. You should be able to do it with one swipe of an export, or at least give us the option. All you get is the PST, and no settings are saved there. You get the email, but you don't get anything else. So I feel your pain, Jeffrey. I don't know if there's going to be an easy way, especially going from Live Mail to Outlook, because Live Mail, they look at that as an individual home user, end user product. And they look at Outlook as more of a corporate email, although I disagree because, I mean, everybody uses Outlook now. I know a lot of people that just use that at home, even not connecting to an Exchange server, but getting your mail via POP. I do that all the time. Let's see if we can get some better utilities or suggestions for Jeffrey. And I know we can all benefit from that as we help people with their email issues or migrate them from one system to another. This is about Carbonite. And this is from Eric. When my Carbonite subscription is done, in a few months, I am going with Mozy. Carbonite will not auto backup files over 4 gigs. Video files have to be done manually. Sometimes it will not allow you to backup files. I will have to check the character thing. I have a class project of a simple MSQL data, Microsoft SQL database creation and populate data. It creates .temp files and those are not backed up. I had to zip up the files. I am sure I am missing some. Be sure to check out their help. You cannot back up external hard drives, so try to store some data off your laptop and back it up. This is not really an unlimited plan because of all the stipulations. Mozy does have a filter for you to not back up videos 500K plus, but it can be removed. Far as I can recall, it backs up USB external hard drives. I will be able to back up more stuff once I get Mozy running. Thank you, Eric. Eric, thanks for the info. In the chat, I know a couple people mentioned and recommend Jungle Disk. That is another fine backup solution that you should look into, not just Mozy, but also look into Jungle Disk. And I will have links to all of those. Red mentioned Crash Plan. Yes, that's another one. This is from Bill. Mike, recent subscriber to the podcast, which I love. I'm not sure if you covered it previously, but as an IT consultant, have you ever used Spiceworks? I used it a long time ago, and it looks like I'm going to have to try it again because here we go. He continues, it's a fantastic network management package that lets you monitor and report on every machine in a LAN WAN, and by installing a copy at your client's site called a remote collector, you can also have that information relayed back to your own instance over the internet. You can literally sit at your home office and get a full report on every client's network, which patches, updates have been applied, which machines don't have antivirus protection or have overlapping coverage, what new software has been installed, events from servers, machine specs, and performance monitors, etc. It also does some basic network mapping and a help desk system as well. When I first used Spiceworks, it was just really a help desk kind of a small ticketing system. And when I remember using it, I never explored some of the features you're talking about here, Bill, and it sounds pretty neat. It's not, he continues, it's not a real-time system, but it's pretty amazing inventory for a free application. I would have given anything to have this back when I was a consultant. I know many of your shows lately have focused on what independent consultants can charge for and upsell. This would be a pretty amazing way to offer your clients the next best thing to an on-site IT department without you having to be there physically. Total network monitoring and a local help desk application, and would give you a great tool to go in yearly and hand your contact a printed report of all their workstations that could use RAM, hard drive, software upgrades, and your quote to implement it. Anyway, sorry if you've covered it previously. I work in a corporate environment these days and use this application constantly. A real fan. This is very, very interesting. I have not used Spiceworks, like I said, in a long time, but I am going to check it out and play with it on my home network, and let's see what happens. If anybody else has some experience with Spiceworks, let me know. Let me know your feelings of that. And I'm on their emailing list, I know, so I know I've registered a long time ago because I get often updates of what they're doing with the new version and everything. And right now I've been just deleting those emails, but now I might pay a little more attention to it and see if I can incorporate that with some of my current clients. This is from John. I love your show. Thanks very much. I have to say that your comments during your last show to the effect of there is no excuse for not installing a 64-bit operating system for a client, I respectfully but heartily disagree with you. We are in the healthcare IT management business and have found many healthcare-related devices, such as USB X-ray sensors and scanners, that still only support a 32-bit OS. I would be willing to bet money that there are also a number of specialty devices in other business verticals that support only 32-bit operating systems as well. Furthermore, I find that for the vast majority of folks, 2 gigs of memory is plenty adequate for Windows 7. Oh, let's finish here. Just thought I would throw this in the pot. Thanks, and keep up the wonderful work you are doing. John, I have many clients now using Windows 7 64-bit. You are correct in one thing. When I said don't even consider the 32-bit, that was really for the home end user more than anyone else. For corporate, before you roll it out, you clearly have to test. And I've talked about this a while ago. You definitely have to do a test of all the applications and devices. And you are correct that 32-bit in certain circumstances, that's all you're going to be able to do because you're married to certain vertical devices that the drivers do not support 64-bit operating system. And if you're in that scenario, clearly you have to go 32-bit, but you should test before you roll it out in a corporate environment, testing those vertical market devices. Now, one thing I take task with, John, you say 2 gig is enough. I wholeheartedly, completely disagree with you. You need 4 gig minimum. Now, on 32-bit, you're only going to light up 3.5 gig or is what you're going to see in the 32-bit for Windows 7. To me, that is a minimum. 2 gig is not enough for Windows 7. And I have Windows 7 running in a lot of environments. Memory is cheap. If you can go 64-bit, you go 64-bit and you put 4 gig of memory. 8's better, but go 4 gig as a minimum. I do not allow any client right now, anybody that asks for my advice, I do not allow them to buy any workstation or laptop with less than 4 gig of memory. To me, that is a minimum requirement. You definitely want to experience Windows 7 with proper performance. And right now, 4 gig, I think, is fine. I use 8 for my main workstation because I do lots of work, lots of processing when I'm putting a show out and when I'm broadcasting live and certainly when I am compressing my audio and converting it and working with the audio files. The more memory I have and the more processors, the better and faster I'll be able to get things done. My recommendation, 4 gigs of memory, but I should have been clearer when I made my recommendations on 32-bit versus 64-bit. And John, I'm glad you called me on that. And anybody, you know, I'm one person with one opinion. I'm not always right, and that's one of the things. I think I'm right most of the time, but seriously, if you disagree, and Winston disagrees with me a lot, and will call me on things, and, you know, hey, leave me a voicemail, send me an audio file, you know, send me an email, and make your case and tell me, because this was a real good point that John brought up about that, and there are vertical markets and devices that you got to be very, very careful about, so thank you. This is from Bluesy. Thank you very much for your highly informative and certainly interesting shows, which I have been following for the past years. I would, however, appreciate very much if you could please advise me if your podcasts are still downloadable via Juice, iPodder aggregator. You know, I have to check that. I haven't used Juice in a long time because they've stopped updating and supporting it. I have been using this aggregator for many years, but lately I could only get partial files of your shows. Even though I tried refreshing your podcast feed in the aggregator, I encounter no such problem when downloading other podcast feeds. Could be you're using the wrong podcast feed. And Kate mentioned Zipod, and Kate, that's exactly what I was going to mention. Try Zipod, Z-I-E-P-O-D, great little app. And what I do, I test my feed with Zipod. I used to test it with Juice, but I'll tell you, they've abandoned Juice, so you might want to move on. But here's some advice. If you want to use a feed, the best feed to use right now, and boy, I have a feeling this is going to change too, for the podcast, actually to receive everything, it's micnation.net/feed, and that'll get you everything. If you want just the podcast, then throw another /podcast. So you can go micnation.net/feed/podcast. And I think if you're using my old miketechshow.xml file, even though I continue to update it because of the change of the name of the domain that I have. And I still now I have to pull back miketechshow.com, and everything's probably going to flip and change and be straight miketechshow.com probably in a couple weeks. Try mikenation.net/feed, and I think that's going to work fine. And Zipod certainly works for all of the feeds, because I have tested that. And I still continue to use my old miketechshow.xml file. I still update that every week when I add fresh content out there. That feed I know works because I test it. That, I think, is it for tonight's tech content. I have some independent music from Fred Waters, and the group is Loudwater. The song is Kelly, and Fred is a regular listener of the podcast, and he stops into the chat from time to time when I'm broadcasting live, and we love supporting independent artists. I've played some of Fred's music in the past, so he sent me this a couple weeks ago, a couple songs, so I am glad to oblige and play and promote his music. Give a listen, and then I'll be back to wrap up.
Things just fell apart. Just the end of a new start.
Yeah.
Voice and wisdom fall apart.
Yeah.
I hope to be one with open arms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
was Loudwater and the song Kelly. And I will have a link to Loudwater's website in the show notes. So take a look, check them out, check out more of their music and support the band. I really appreciate it. If you were making any purchases from Amazon, I would like you to go to miketechshow.com. And before you purchase, copy the link, save it, or just click on my Amazon link right under the affiliates at the top of the left-hand section of the website. Click on that, then make your purchase, and you will be contributing to the Mike Tech Show. I really appreciate all of your support. Thank you so very, very much. That's it. I will be back next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.